Hello everyone, this is Matt. Welcome to our second episode of our podcast series, Takeout, with Ashley Coff RD and Robin O'Brien, discussing better nutrition simplified in the new food economy. Today's podcast gets down to the basics, food simplified, where we'll be discussing organic food, travel, allergies, and the changing state of food in America and the long-term impact of it. I'd like to thank our sponsors for the show, Earthbound Farm and So Delicious. Right, that's enough from me. Over to you, ladies.
Hi, everyone. Really excited today. This is one of my absolute favorite topics, and I'm just thrilled to be here with Robin to help you get food simplified. It's one of those crazy things, you know, when you're, especially when you're traveling outside of the U.S., et cetera, and you think, like, what? Gosh, why isn't food just food? You know, even when we talk about, and people ask me, like, well, what is organic? And I'm like, gosh, I'm sure we didn't even have to use the word organic, and that could just be food, and the rest of it would be what I like to often call chemistry lab projects. And by the way, I have nothing against chemistry. It's chemistry class, chemistry lab, super fun. It's just not what belongs in our body. So anyway, I wanted to kick off today with that, you know, you have those pivotal moments when you're thinking about something. So I spend a lot of time thinking about how I can make food recommendations and nutrition recommendations really simple for all of you. And when I was talking with Robin, or I think it was at an event where she was talking, Robin, I heard you say this one thing, and it has stuck with me, and every time I hear it, and or now when I say it and TM you and give you credit, it just makes it so simple. And you like to say, we're not allergic to food, we're allergic to what's been done to it. Or how do you actually say that? And tell me what you mean by it. I mean, just, it's so great.
Well, you know, I mean, it is. It's one of those things where I didn't think about any of this stuff. You know, like most of us growing up, you just trust that whatever's on the grocery store shelves is fine, and you don't give a whole lot of thought to it. But then when our youngest child had this allergic reaction, like so many other people, all of a sudden I'm reading these labels. And when you really turn that package over, whatever it is, you know, there's a lot that's going into our food. And a lot of those ingredients are new, and they have never been in our food supply before. And so as I was starting to learn about this and learn about food allergies, and a food allergy is when your body sees food as foreign and launches this inflammatory response to drive out that foreign invader, you know, I thought, is there something foreign in the food that wasn't there when we were kids? Because, I mean, we've talked about this a lot. We didn't know people that had food allergies like this when we were little. You know, it wasn't a concern on airplanes and in schools and, you know, at birthday parties the way that it is today. You know, we didn't have allergen-friendly foods like lining the grocery store aisles the way we do today. So this has come on really hard.
Yeah, I think the only thing like I ever remember was like kind of the awkward entree into lactose intolerance that I felt like older adults. It was kind of like not talked about, but like now they weren't having milk, you know. And I think this whole world of intolerance suddenly became, you know, where people were saying, oh, I don't do so well with this, now became allergy, like, oh my gosh, EpiPen, you know, this is life, you know, certainly life interrupting and often life threatening. So I think you're absolutely right that it's really amplified to the point that we have grocery stores set up in entirely different ways.
Which is why I think, you know, when you came out with this concept and this vision to introduce better food, you know, better eating, better health, simplified, that is what people need. Because as a country, you know, we're waking up to the fact that we've got a whole bunch of stuff in our food that wasn't there when we were kids. So are we allergic to food, or are we allergic to what's been done to it? Are we actually allergic to the food, or the way that it's processed, the way that it's grown, the way that it's been treated with all these synthetic chemicals? What are we actually allergic to? And with that, you know, all of a sudden you just have that like paralysis moment as a parent or as an eater, as an American, where you're just standing there in the grocery store and you're just thinking, what am I supposed to eat and how am I supposed to figure all of this out? And to me, it felt like, you know, I was standing there and I thought, I am food illiterate. I don't know where to start. You know, the basics that I learned as a kid of fat and sugar and protein and carbs, all of a sudden when you're talking additives and all these other things and the importance of vitamins and minerals, it didn't matter how schooled I was or how educated I had been. I didn't know that stuff. And so to come in and say, you know, there are a lot of us that feel this way, and it's not anything anybody needs to feel awkward about. We're all coming to school on this issue together now as a country, and it is just, it's amazing to see what's happening as a country. So, you know, I would love it if you I mean, when you first kind of hit on this concept, you know, what was it for you that led you to that place?
Yeah, you know, and it's really interesting. You know, what you say and what you've expressed is hits me at the core. I decided, you know, after a couple of years of working in advertising, huge mea culpa, because I was advertising, you know, Kellogg cereal, Sugar Smacks, Raisin Bran, et cetera, and then going the other direction and just working on a startup. But I had all these health questions for myself and that the medical community couldn't answer, and also that I wasn't finding in textbooks. And so I decided to go back to school to become a dietitian. That was my investment, you know, 4 years in school, then a year in an unpaid internship, and then, you know, so on and so forth in building my practice. But I really feel like today people, and especially parents, feel like they need my nutrition degree to go to the grocery store. Like, when patients come into my office, they are literally, I mean, on the verge of tears and or in tears in terms of working so hard. You know, they're trying to figure it out. You know, it actually frustrates me so much that I really, like, take issue with the books. I know what they mean, but the ones that are, like, nutrition for dummies or, you know, this, you know, whatever for idiots and this sort of thing. And I'm like, okay, that's not the case. Like, you're not an idiot. You're not a dummy. It's that the information around nutrition has either two things have happened to it. One is it's either been oversimplified. So, you know, when I was working in advertising, I taught you what a complete breakfast was, and I hit it at you every time you saw a commercial. And the hard part about that was, first of all, it was totally wrong. It was a carb bomb, and it had a lot of refined, you know, it was like all refined flour and sugar, but, you know, and it wasn't nutrient balanced. But the other part was it was totally one size fits all. And what I know about nutrition is there one size does not fit all. And especially one size doesn't even fit one person all throughout their life or even all throughout a week. So, you know, we need to do better than that. And on the flip side, we also have this nutrition that has been overcomplicated. I mean, literally, we have people drinking activated charcoal today, or people telling me that your actual water isn't good enough for you if the pH hasn't been altered in order to have a higher, you know, to be more alkaline or that sort of a thing. So we've got this whole spectrum in there, and I just sat back and said, you know, where I started my career out wanting to help people realize that if you make better nutrition choices, if you know that your nutrition impacts your health and you start to make better nutrition choices, wow, you'll get better health. Then I realized a decade or 15 years later, people know that, you know, no matter what's going on in the country, I go to, you know, all sorts of different, you know, communities of, you know, depending on their financial levels and their interest in food and, you know, all these other things and access to food. Everybody gets that their nutrition matters for their health. But the problem is people are not understanding what better nutrition is. We don't have those tools to make it really simple. So that was really, you know, what hit it on the head for me, which is I've got to help simplify this so that, like, you know, someone can go on to teach me about the new food economy, i.e. Robin, you know, and somebody else can be an amazing school teacher and doesn't have to feel like half of her day is spent learning about nutrition so that she can feed her family, or, you know, somebody else can go on to solve our, you know, internet privacy issues and they don't have to worry about what they can do. I mean, I literally, my clients come from and my patients come from all these different areas of expertise that I want in the world, and I don't feel like it's right for you to have to feel like you need a nutrition degree. So one of the things that I think, you know, we can really do in this space is, first of all, you know, talk about the difference between an allergy and an intolerance. But second of all, Robin, I know you have, like, you know, from your conference and from just different people who write and interact, like, how are people, what are the quick tips and the things that are working for people to navigate, you know, as somebody who is a parent of a child who has an allergy? Do you treat that one child differently, or do you change what everybody in the household eats? Like, what are some of the things that you've learned and all, from your experience as well as from the people that you connect with throughout this?
Well, you know, I think the point you make that diet is no longer one size fits all is a super important point, because if you think back to, like, 30 or 40 years ago, say at Thanksgiving, you know, most people probably sat around the Thanksgiving table and we all probably ate more or less the same meal. And today, you know, with the escalating rates of diabetes or peanut allergies or milk allergies, that can't happen the same way. And so it's changing the way we feed our families. And I think probably the most positive impact that I have seen, especially in the food allergy community, is that parents just have to step away from processed food. There is just too much in there and too many may contains. And most parents just find themselves saying, I don't want to take that risk. So the silver lining, I think, in food allergies is that it is teaching us how to eat clean again. And, you know, it's I mean, my grandmother is 103 years old, and I think, you know, I'm probably getting back to more along the lines of how she fed her kids, which was just with real whole food. And so, you know, for us, that was the first shift. We ate less fake food. And so instead of bringing the snack pack or the, you know, bar that had a list of 110 ingredients and may contain whatever, you know, all of a sudden I found myself packing oranges and apples and bananas and things and raisins, you know, just snacks for the kids that were a lot simpler. So that was kind of the first step. The other thing I think that we're seeing, which is a huge positive, is we're eating more at home. Parents just can't risk going out. You know, the regulations and laws around labeling in a restaurant are still really, they're still really lax. And that's not to accuse or blame anybody. It's just that this epidemic has come on so fast and so quickly that that type of information hasn't caught up with us yet. So, you know, we have a lot more families cooking at home. You see just this explosion in cookbooks and websites and, you know, teaching parents, teaching kids how to make their own food. I have a nephew that is just deathly allergic to the peanut, and he's 12, and he's just taught himself how to cook, and it's the coolest thing. And he just loves it, and he's inspired, and he feels in control of his health instead of feeling scared. And I think those kinds of shifts are really positive.
I love that. You know, I was actually I was just with Spike Jurdy, who's one of my favorite chefs, and he's a James Beard winner, and he and his wife have Woodbury Kitchen in Baltimore, and then also this new coffee shop called Artifact. And I didn't know this about her, but she actually is celiac, and when they were starting Woodbury Kitchen, they started it as farm-to-table, kind of before farm-to-table was, you know, all the rage, and especially in Baltimore, he was really just committed to, it's been exciting for me to actually explore, you know, in Virginia and the areas around Maryland, we actually have a ton of farms, so we get amazing food, and so they really just wanted to support local farmers. But when she was diagnosed with celiac, she really, it was like, took it to the next level in terms of understanding how important from a restaurant standpoint, being super clear. And you know what's really interesting? I actually asked Spike if he was Southern. He's like, oh, no. And he looked at me kind of funny. He's like, why'd you ask me that? I said, because he had given me this whole conversation about, he said, you know, my mission in a restaurant is to deliver you the absolute best hospitality. And I know that stress and the stress of if you're going to get sick, he's like, if you go home not feeling well after your meal, and certainly if you get really sick, you know, that is like the worst hospitality. Like, so I actually have taken the whole food allergy and intolerance approach to, I won't say, you know, he's like, we get it. Some of those restaurants out there that say, you know, we politely decline any requests for changes. He's like, that's not us. He's like, we see hospitality as you getting your food with the way that you exactly want it. And they actually have instituted something that I would love for restaurateurs and hopefully someday even schools and other places around the country, where they actually have a sticker when they're preparing your meal, and every person who interacts with your plate throughout the development process, like all the way through to the server, is moving that sticker along it. So it'll say, you know, they have a green gluten-free one, and it literally moves on your plate, your tray, and then when they present your meal to you, it has it on there, and then they take it off in front of you. And I was just thinking, you know, he's describing this to me, and you know what, I've eaten at his restaurant a million times. I don't even think I've ever paid attention to that, and that's probably because, you know, for me, my choices are intolerances and as opposed to looking at an allergy. But I was thinking, wow, what a way to, without having to interrupt the conversation flow or without having to make somebody feel like their meal, like they're awkward or uncomfortable, they get that added security, and it also really empowers the wait staff to give a level of service that you know, they can feel proud of. It probably plays out in their tip and, you know, just how everyone is feeling good. So it's an interesting thing to think about dining out as actually, you know, and dealing with food allergies and intolerances, actually part of the hospitality piece, which I hadn't thought about. It's interesting.
Well, you know, and the other side of this is that, again, like if you just look at the numbers and how quickly this condition has escalated in our country, you go into those restaurants and you can ask your waiter or your waitress, you can ask the guy behind the bar, you know, most people now know somebody that's dealing with this. So it's suddenly not something that's out there that's some abstract or some annoyance, it's personal. And once someone knows that and knows that it's personal, you know, it just, it becomes part of the conversation and part of the dialogue and not some kind of extraneous thing. And I think when you consider the fact that a food allergic reaction sends somebody to the emergency room once every 3 minutes in the United States, it is a pervasive problem, and it has created that awareness. And so I think, you know, again, as consumers, as citizens, as restaurant owners, you know, there are amazing restaurant owners out of Boston that have sons, you know, with a peanut allergy. So we know it as the consumer. I think what's been slow are the studies kind of quantifying it. Mm. And so, you know, probably the last people to sort of wrap their heads around this data are the government and the people that are relying on that government data, you know. And I think when you go to the consumer, we really are leading this thing. And it's been fascinating to see that response, you know. And I think one of the things that you talk about a lot is, and this was fascinating to me the first time that I heard it, because I grew up on those PBS series where it's like, you are what you eat, you know, from your head down to your feet. And you're actually saying, no, you are what you absorb. So, you know, I think for food allergy families, they would probably love to hear more on that, and anybody who's really trying to take control of their health.
Yeah, you know, it's one of my mantras that I sing to patient after patient. And now, you know, when you start to get a lot of head nods in your office, you know, I work for myself, so like really my only report card or feedback is the success of my patients. And, you know, when I see them light up, when I say to them, hey, actually, you are not what you eat. You are what you digest and absorb. And that's why I'm starting off with questions. Whether somebody's coming to me for cholesterol, for food allergies, for weight loss, for fertility, for cancer, whatever it is, I'm going to be talking to them about their digestion, because let's be clear, it's at the core, pun intended, of everything that we're doing. And when we think about it, you know, we focus so long on you are what you eat. And we do want to think about, you know, the quality of what we're putting into our bodies. But if we put something into our body and, you know, one component is we're doing a lot today. So I have people that are, you know, eating their lunch at their desk while they're on a call, or gosh, it upsets me, but I know some people are eating while they're driving. You know, I know people have long commutes and these sorts of things, and or they're, you know, trying to do five different things and throw some food in. And the body is saying, hold on a second, I do not like to multitask that way, and that you may be giving me, you know, organic kale, and I may be feeling like I'm getting a Dodger dog. Like, it just doesn't feel good the way that it's coming in, right? So I think that the digestion part can be as much as the environmental stimuli, but also how is your digestive system set up inside? And one of the things that I think is the most important if you are dealing with allergies or intolerances, and you guys know this well, it's very rare that an allergy or intolerance comes on in 1 second. It typically is a buildup of irritation that's going on in the body. Somewhere the body is saying it's going to recognize something as an invader, or it's going to, over time, just become increasingly irritated by something. So what happens, and sometimes it even takes people a longer time, you know, in the case of certain allergies where you have that immediate reaction, like your child, that's a quick one. You're like, okay, we got to figure it out. But you took, you know, you took a bunch of things out and then said, okay, let me figure this out. In that time period, what we have to do is, it really is important to eliminate what may be offending to the body, but it's also absolutely critical to work on healing the digestive system. And that's something that I focus on a lot, because it can have to do with, you know, the gut of mom when she, you know, in terms of whether the child was, what the birth was like, or what mom's microbiome is like. We're learning a lot more about that. We're probably learning it could have to do with dad, or, you know, the microbiome there as well. But we also know that there are things, you know, whether you're given antibiotics or medications or what your environment is like, that all impact that digestive tract and the ability for it to recognize what it should keep and what it should get rid of, how it's absorbing certain things, what's staying in the digestive system, what's leaving the digestive system, the pace at which it leaves the digestive system, because if it all goes out to your cells too quickly, that can be overwhelming to the body. You know, is it going to the right, is it being tagged to go to the right place? So, you know, we really have to think about the digestive system as doing so much, and saying it's not enough to eat something because it's a good source of magnesium. We need to make sure that magnesium gets where, you know, it's meant to be going. So I think that's really important. I have a number of different resources on my website for people. I even have a quiz that you can take. I call it the AKA Digestive Tune-Up, that you can see and, you know, asks you a couple of questions that you could ask yourself or ask your kids. But one of the things I highly emphasize is that if you are somebody who is either dealing with an allergy or an intolerance, or you're helping a child or a family member with that, really have to pay attention to not just what your diet is free of, but what it's full of in terms of gut healing and digestively friendly nutrients and how they're coming in. You know, I love what you said about eating home. One of the things about eating at home, most of the time, not always, because we can turn on TV and do these other things, but most of the time there's less stimuli going on than if you're out eating out, and that may also just be helping all of you in terms of your digestive systems absorbing it more easily and more calmly, and also just how you go to sleep, which impacts recovery and all of these good things. So a lot going on there, and I thought we could look at one example because you and I have talked about this one quite a bit, but soy, I think, is a great one. When you talk about, are we allergic to the food or what's been done to it? You know, for me as a dietitian, soy has been, you know, what we eat in this country now, I don't even think it's fair to call it soy. And you actually have, I think there are some farmers or some soy farmers that you've had conversations with in terms of growing organic soy.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it is. And I think, I mean, if you look at the technology that's now employed in our food, I don't even know if our grandparents would still call it food, you know? And so, is soy the problem? No, I don't necessarily think soy is the problem. I think it's what we've done to soy. And when you genetically engineer something, anything, and you fundamentally change its characteristics, and in one of those ways that, you know, soy has been changed, it has been changed to withstand increasing doses of these synthetic weed killers. So what's the long-term impact of that? What's the long-term impact of that change? What's the long-term impact of the accumulation of those synthetic weed killers, not only on the plant, but on the soil and in the humans that are digesting it? And as you speak about it, it's like, you know, what of that are we absorbing? What are these foreign parts and foreign components doing to our systems? And I think when you step back from that, you know, there are a lot of questions that are introduced with these new food products. And I think because of that, you know, other countries around the world take a much more precautionary approach than we do. And they, on the one hand, will say, okay, we're going to label these things, which, you know, 64 countries around the world have labeled genetically engineered foods. Or they don't allow them into the food system until they've been proven safe. And that's a much longer process. And here in the United States, you know, I mean, I came out of finance and investments, so like we're capitalists. And so we want to drive it to market as quickly as possible. And I get that. But at this point, you know, with the runaway rates we're seeing of all of these conditions and diseases across our society and the economic impact of that and the way it's impacting our healthcare system, our families, our own personal finances, you know, the system that we may have employed even 20 years ago isn't working anymore. And so consumers are demanding transparency. And I think, you know, with what's been done to soy is one example. What's been done to corn is another. You know, corn in and of itself was not a problem when it was genetically engineered to produce its own insecticide internally within the plant, and that corn was then regulated by the EPA as a pesticide. Suddenly we're not talking about corn. We're actually talking about a pesticide that the EPA regulates. So what is that doing to us, and what is that doing to our bodies? And, you know, in complicating food the way that we have, what else have we complicated? Because I'm sure that the companies that were doing this in the first place, I mean, I don't think that the intent was as evil or, you know, terrible as some others might say. I think what we have now are a whole bunch of unintended consequences, and it's causing all of us to reevaluate. It's causing everybody to step back and say, is this the smartest system we can be employing to grow our food? Is this the smartest system when it comes to informing consumers about our food? And, you know, as we learn more, as you talked about in the beginning of this, you know, it can be really overwhelming. And I think what is really important to me is that you stop and you say, okay, we're all in this together. We're all learning this together. And nobody can do everything, but all of us can do something. And in that, there is this opportunity to build better systems and build support teams. And, you know, one of the things that I see a real need for today for 21st century families is that every pediatrician's office, and I'm so thankful mine does this, every pediatrician's office should be partnered with a dietitian, because these families are coming in and they're food illiterate, they don't know how to feed these kids. you know, we grew up not being taught how to cook, and now all of a sudden we're dealing with diabetes or autism or ADHD or food allergies, and it is terrifying to be standing there and thinking, I don't know how to take care of my kids.
Right.
I don't know how to cook, you know, and for many of us, I mean, that was my place 10 years ago, and I'm mortified to admit how little I knew, but I knew that little, and so to have a friend who was a dietitian step in and say, here are some simple things that you can do, it was so reassuring, and it was so critical to unlock me from that paralysis mode into this forward movement. And I think, you know, again, you've got to give yourself permission to accept what you don't know, to ask for help, and to begin to make the changes at a pace that is workable for you.
Yeah. You know, and first of all, I will thank you. I will always take praise for saying a dietitian. And I always like to say, you know, the perfect partner in your healthcare is a doctor and a dietitian. I mean, I definitely think that. I like doctors to be able to tell you either what's wrong with you or what you need to be doing, and then a dietitian to really be able to focus on the implementation. The problem is we have some real issues, just as you were talking about government. You know, the dietetic community is very evidence-based, and so in the absence of some of this great, you know, science evidence, and really like in this world more of what we call, like, there's evidence-based medicine, but then there's also practice-based evidence, right? And so for me, there are certain things that I just know they work because I've been practicing for 10 years, and I'm willing to go out on a limb in the beginning and say to my patient, hey, if this is working for you, let me understand that part. So for example, and some of it comes from even just what I experienced. I mean, I was a vegan in 1995, and you know, my belly looked 6 months pregnant despite like being, you know, the most exercise and what I thought was the cleanest diet. And I was eating soy 4 and 5 times a day. Now, the issue is, was I always having organic soy? No. Was I having soy dog, soy cheese, soy in my latte, soy this? And so it was pieces and parts of soy, you know, and I started to realize, gosh, maybe I don't want soy protein isolate. You know, when I hear all the benefits of soy in a traditional Chinese diet, it's tofu, it's tempeh, it's, you know, it's fermented whole food soy, and it isn't genetically modified soy. So there's, you know, there are parts of that that for a long time I just said, I am completely allergic to soy, I can't touch it. And then I started to say over time, you know, now I can have a little bit of soy if it's whole organic soy, and also if I'm, you know, there are certain times that I'll have it and certain times I won't, because I do notice a hormonal piece. But what's been interesting on that part, and even if I follow some of my colleagues, you know, Instagrams or, you know, different places that we're interacting with food recommendations, it also seems that, and this is especially in the allergy intolerance, food intolerance community, where, you know, one day, I like to borrow from Heidi Klum, it's like one day you're in, the next day you're out, you know, so soy is in, soy is out, you know, flax is in, flax is out, then it's almond and coconut and cashew. And what I'm loving seeing, and I love companies like So Delicious that are basically saying, hey, we're going to offer all of these for you. And the reason that I love that is there is one common truth, and that is that your diet is not meant to be a mono diet. And I have had people that their allergies and intolerances are so bad that there are maybe like 4 or 5 foods in the beginning that they feel okay with. And my job from that space is actually to move them as quickly from 4 to 5 to, you know, 10 to 15 to hopefully 30 to 50 to one day, you know, oh, you only have to exclude 4 to 5. And maybe that's only, you know, depending on certain quantities if we're paying attention to quality and those sorts of things. So, you know, one of the hard parts, and I empathize with this with my patients who have gone to see dietitians, or they've gone to, you know, they've gone to their doctor's office and they've gotten lists of here are all the things that you have to avoid. I think we have to be careful of going down the path of over-celebrating just one thing as a solution. You know, so for example, one of the recommendations that I would give to you know, any patient in this space, or certainly any parent dealing with, is that we want to try to still have the diet have as much variety to it as possible. So if we find out that your child is allergic definitively allergic to nuts, then okay, let's look at, you know, what are the options, what the variety of options that are out there that are non-nuts, or if it's tree nuts, like what about the non, you know, tree nuts and things like that. And at the same time, I'm all about convenience, and I also understand decision fatigue and saying, you know, sometimes I just don't want to worry like about finding something new, but we do have to challenge ourselves to say, just in the same way you would not feed a baby apple every single day, because you know how important it is for the baby to start to, you know, build a palate and learn new things. We can't just give a child or an adult, you know, any of us can't subsist on coconut in every form. I love coconut. I love coconut water, coconut oil, coconut ice cream, like all of these things. But if I'm reading a food journal and that's all that they have in there, I'm definitely going to worry about, not are we going to create some intolerance in that way, but are you giving your body the variety that it needs to function? Your body actually likes to shift gears, right? It likes it in fitness. It definitely likes it in nutrition. So I think there's something really interesting to that part, which is the fear can be debilitating, but the solution can't be in the oversimplification, which is just, I have a list of four or five foods exclusively that will work, right? So it's kind of a balance in that way.
Yeah, so, you know, I'm just thinking, so I think about the people listening, and I think, you know, I don't want them to feel overwhelmed, because I know how that feels. As a mother of four, I know how that feels. I was so ashamed of how little I knew. You know, it was terrifying, that moment of paralysis. Oh, my gosh, what am I going to do? How do I feed these kids? All of that emotion is a block, you know, and we need everybody. We need all hands on deck. We need all this awesome energy and love and passion to fix this in this game. So, you know, thankfully now, you know, just in the last couple of years, we've had some amazing conferences pop up, like the Food Allergy Blogger Conference is happening this year in Denver, and we've got ShiftCon, which is happening in LA. You know, we've got some of these bigger industry conferences, but I think what's fascinating is that these consumer-facing conferences are just exploding right now. And, you know, I would invite everybody who's listening, you know, to really, share with us too, what are the resources that you found the most valuable? Kids with Food Allergies is a great one. Allergic Child is another absolutely incredible one, founded by a mother whose son is now in college, and she's taken this road. She's ahead of all of us, and she has just been an amazing resource and an amazing friend. Obviously, Ashley's website and Allergy Kids, you know, we're always going to be sharing this information out, but I think what's important in this for us is also to continue this dialogue with you guys and have you guys, you know, send an email, let us know what are the things you guys are finding useful, what's been really great, and then Ashley, you know, from your side as a dietitian, what are kind of some closing thoughts that you could share with the listeners?
Yeah, I think that the, you know, it's the, there are brands, and we both like to celebrate the brands that are asking these same questions, or even better, or not better, but equally impressive, are founded on the principles of they themselves were dealing with this. And they were like, hold on, I got to clean this up and make sure there are great options. So I think that part's great. I think actually I'm going to take the tip that you gave, which is, simplify your food choices. So the less processed or the less highly processed your food is, the less likely it is to have things that are going to be irritating and challenging to the body. Definitely, definitely, everybody needs a digestive tune-up and or just to check in almost on your digestion and figure out if you need a digestive tune-up. I look at it every season when I'm changing over my cupboards and changing over the closet. It's right in there. I just want to check in and see how my digestive system is doing. So I think there's that part. And then the other part is I answer weekly questions for free. You know, I do the Ask Ashley Koff RD on Twitter and on Facebook. We have a lot of these things answered on our website. But Robin, I come back to, you know, where you feel like there was so much that you didn't know. And I think that, first of all, unfortunately, I don't think that that's actually, it isn't a deficit of knowledge on your side. It's the fact that the situation has changed, and today there are just more things that we have to know about. But I also think that there are ways to basically turn around and pat yourself on the back and or say, hey, I've got certain things covered, so let me really dive into this piece that I don't, you know, that maybe is a little bit less clear for me, or that part. So, you know, pun intended, but break it down into bite sizes and baby steps, and I think that you're going to do really well in that space. I remember saying when Elizabeth Hasselbeck and I were working on her book and she was just gluten-free, she's like, oh my gosh, I'm eating so much processed gluten-free stuff. And I said, hey, in the beginning, you know, before you learn to make your own gluten-free cookie or your own gluten-free bar, in the beginning is she's celiac. You have to have something gluten-free. So this can be your go-to. And then once you like have kind of things have calmed down and settled and you're able to be back in your life, now let's figure out time for you to maybe explore one or two recipes that you know, and go from that. So I think it's really about pacing the whole experience, especially when you're dealing with a food allergy that is just it's so scary for everyone around. So I think that's really important.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, it's just not to make the perfect the enemy of the good, and that we really are, I think people tend to forget, we're at the early stages of this. You know, these conditions have hit us so quickly. We were in the early stages, and companies are listening, and, you know, Kraft, Mondelez just bought Enjoy Life Food, which is a big allergen-friendly line, you know, because they saw, they realized that this wasn't a niche. This is something that's really real and significant. And, you know, parents are going to hold them to that standard. And I know there's deep, deep concern that the ingredients, you know, they may kind of mess around and jack it up with some of these artificial things. But when you're dealing with a life-threatening situation like this, you know, they cannot afford to. So, you know, for the food industry that is already with us, thank you so much. Thank you to So Delicious and Earthbound and these companies that are listening and get it. And to those that are listening and trying to learn, thank you for being there too.
Great. Take care, everyone.
I'm learning something new every day. Thanks for that, ladies. I'd like to once again thank our sponsors for the show, Earthbound Farm and So Delicious. Now on to the next show. We have our first guest, and we couldn't be more excited that food coach Laurie Corbin will be joining us on the show and talking about food in the media, fitness, health, and how the public's perception has changed. Be sure to tune in. Until next time, see you then.